from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. A state budget record was set Friday as California Governor Gavin Newsom unveiled the largest ever, a $220 billion proposal for the next fiscal year. While he acknowledged the likelihood of an economic downturn at some point in the future, Newsom underscored the state's strong economy.
We are enjoying not just record unemployment, low unemployment of 3.9% from a peak of 12.2%, but we're also enjoying 117 months of consecutive net job growth.
We're going to get the details on Newsom's budget proposal, which includes lowering drug costs, funding shelters and health care for the homeless, and increased funding for Medi-Cal, the state's health care for low-income people. And that's all next after this. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Governor Newsom's $222 billion California budget proposal unveiled on Friday includes an $80.5 million expansion of Medi-Cal coverage and the creation of a state-owned generic drug label. It also directs more than $1.4 billion to shelter and health care for the state's homeless population. And in this hour, we're going to talk about the governor's priorities, and we want to hear from you. Joining us now is Scott Schaefer, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of the Political Breakdown Show. Good morning, Scott.
Hi, Michael.
I will also say good morning to April Dombowski, who's here with us in studio, KQED's health correspondent. Good morning, April.
Good morning.
And Vanessa Roncagno, KQED's education reporter. Good morning,
Hi there,
Vanessa.
Good morning.
Glad to have you all aboard, and thank you all for being here. And Scott, let's talk to you first of all about sort of the overview of this lofty and ambitious record-making budget, we ought to say. And in fact, it's the second budget proposal, and we're going to highlight the specifics of it. But before we do that, the governor warned of a downturn. I mean, things look pretty flush, but that caveat is there.
You know, Governor Jerry Brown every year started every budget press conference with warning about the looming recession, which he never had to face. So far, none in California. But yeah, there are some signs. I mean, this is inevitable, right? I mean, if you look at the cycle of California's economy, it is a boom-bust cycle. We've had like seven, you know, straight years of growth, and this budget reflects that. It's a record size, $222 billion. That said, the rate of growth in the economy is slowing down. The economy is still growing. It's just growing at a slower pace. And so this governor is, you know, continue to put money in the rainy day fund. It's going to be about a $5.5 billion reserve, according to the Department of Finance. But there are some new initiatives that spend money, and we can talk more about some of the details in a little bit. But, you know, Governor Jerry Brown was known for really resisting long-term like expenditures, you know, using sort of any kind of a surplus to fund things that are going to be an ongoing cost. Because when the economy turns down, then you have big cuts. Certainly, Jerry Brown had to do that when he came into office in 2011. And so I think you're seeing with Gavin Newsom a little bit more willingness to put money into longer-term expenses, things like expanding health care for adult undocumented citizens, expanding Medi-Cal to them. I think there's about $70 million in the budget for that. That will be an ongoing cost, you know, and so if the economy does turn down, things like that will be whacked. I mean, they're going to get cut, but he's willing at least to roll the dice and, you know, spend money on those things, homelessness, hiring more firefighters, things that are going to have an ongoing implication for future years. But clearly he sees, and it's reflected in this budget, homelessness is a big issue. He's going to spend $1.4 billion overall on various homeless programs, a lot of it for local governments to spend, and also fighting wildfires. Those are the things voters care about, and those are the things that he is really focusing on in this budget.
Yeah, I think politically, I like the observation of Tony Atkins, who said this budget reflects California values, and I think she was talking about essentially progressive and liberal values because that's embedded in the policies. The other thing, though, that's embedded just from my perspective is going around the Trump administration. I mean, there are a lot of things that Governor Newsom felt had to be in this budget that he couldn't get accomplished because of the feds pulling out.
Yeah, well, it's both that and also knowing that he scores political points both in California and nationally with Democrats to shore up, for example, the consumer protection aspect of state government. The federal government is pulling away from that. He wants to boost that in the state budget. He's doing the same thing around climate change, homelessness. He's doing it with covered California health care. April can speak more to those things. But so many times during this marathon, almost 3-hour budget rollout on Friday, he talked about, you know, Trump's tweeting about this. We're doing something about this. So clearly this budget, among other things, was meant to be a counterpoint to what the Trump administration and the Republicans in Washington are doing. And he made that very, very clear.
Somewhat of a counterpoint, too, to his predecessor, Jerry Brown?
Well, to a certain extent. I mean, as I said, Jerry Brown was not as big a believer as Gavin Newsom in government programs. I will say that. Jerry Brown certainly embraced a lot of funding that the Democrats in the state legislature wanted, but they had different priorities than he did, and he would often hold the line in some ways that perhaps Governor Newsom will not. I mean, part of it was that Jerry Brown is, you know, sort of inherently frugal. I mean, that's been part of his whole ethos for his whole career. But also he wasn't running for office again. And Gavin Newsom presumably has a political future beyond the governorship. And I think this budget, to a certain extent, reflects that.
Speaks to his ambitions?
Well, you know, over Christmas I was at a holiday party and a couple of his close advisors were talking about Gavin Newsom's future. And one of them said, you know, he has more natural political skills than any one of these people running for president right now, which might be true. And so it's no secret that Gavin Newsom has aspired to be president of the United States for some time now, going back all the way to when he was mayor. And I'm sure he looks at the field and thinks, you know, gosh, if I were running right now, like Jerry Brown did in 1976, after being in office just about a year, it would be a good time in some ways because the economy is doing well. There's a good California story to tell, notwithstanding cost of living and homelessness and some other things. But there's no question he would love to be, you know, he is a natural politician and an ambitious politician. And so I'm sure whether it's in 2024 or beyond, I would certainly not be surprised to see Gavin Newsom run for president.
It's also a good time to give a plug to the fact that Scott will be appearing tonight at 7 p.m. at Herb Theater with former Governor Jerry Brown. They'll be talking a bit about the new state budget and also 2020 politics in addition to Brown's life in public life. A few tickets still available, kqed.org/events. And Scott and I had an opportunity, in fact, to talk about the podcast that he and Guy Maserati and the Bancroft Library were involved in, and it's really something you should avail yourself of if you haven't already. There's a good deal of information in there, and there's an extraordinary amount of information in this budget, so I want to really take it apart as best we can. It just shows how granular and how detailed Newsom is, doesn't it?
You know, it's quite extraordinary. I mean, last year, after being in office just a week, he rolled out his first state budget at the Secretary of State's auditorium, which is quite large. And he went on, I think, for about 90 minutes, which seemed like a long time. This past Friday, he went on for almost 3 hours in extraordinary detail. I mean, he, to the second or third decimal point in some of the budget figures, at one point I asked him a question about housing funding, and he said, well, look at page 115 in the upper right-hand corner of the budget summary, and you'll find the answer to that question. It was a question about housing. And lo and behold, there it was. It's almost freakish, the level of detail that he has. He prides himself in that.
He also prides himself in overcoming dyslexia and that being part of the reason why he has it.
And I think those things are not unrelated. You know, I do think that he is someone who has – I don't know if he has a photographic memory, but he really prepares for these things. And, you know, you had all these budget staffers, including the budget – the finance director standing off at the side, his chief of staff and others. Not once were they – maybe once they were called on for like a brief – you know, something or other. But it was really just Gavin Newsom holding forth for all that time with, like I said, he basically answered every question until there were no more reporter questions.
Governor Wonk, we have a couple of our excellent reporters with us, actually April Domboski's health correspondent for KQED News and Vanessa Roncagno, KQED education reporter. And Vanessa, let's talk first with you about education. Governor's top priorities in education, basically T-shirt shortage and achievement gap.
Yeah, there is a lot of money in this budget focused on the teacher workforce, almost $1 billion, $900 million. That's going towards recruitment efforts, teacher preparation efforts, and to some extent, retention. And some of that is focused on our highest need schools, right? He talked a lot about the achievement gap, and he sees this as a key way to address that issue. He said that he dispatched some of his advisors to Massachusetts and New Jersey to look at what was working there. Those are states that have improved student achievement more than California. And he said it was clear that investing in teachers should be our focus.
Well, he's also talking about 23 high poverty schools, which are disproportionate in the number of teachers of color, and specifically African-American teachers, because they're disproportionate in terms of African-American pupils. What's he going to do about getting more teachers of color? Do we have a plan in mind here from the governor? Do you know?
He's not targeting efforts, as far as I can tell, at increasing teacher diversity, but some of his investments should help, right? I mean, the research shows that subsidizing the cost of teacher preparation should increase teacher diversity, that improving preparation, the better prepared a teacher is, the more likely they are to stick around, and teachers of color tend not always to get the best preparation. I think what some advocates would like to have seen more of is retention efforts and a focus on improving conditions in schools. Retention is a huge part of the teacher shortage, and teachers of color are less likely to stick around.
I would add to that, in addition to what Vanessa said, is that there's a $20,000 stipend in the budget for teachers mm-hmm. who agree to teach in low-income school districts for, I think, 5 years or more, which doesn't speak to the race of the teachers. But, I mean, really what we want to do really is help lift up kids of color, particularly Latino and African-American kids, which I think the goal is, you know, that's
just
one of the goals.
Just to dovetail on that for a moment, there's even $20 million in the budget for teacher loan bailout, which is really at least a somewhat of an economic incentive. But going back to the achievement gap, if we could with you, Vanessa, I'm concerned about the fact that the governor is putting money into, I shouldn't say I'm concerned about it, but I'd like actually to flesh it out with you, grant proposal money. This is for improving schools technically. What, there's about $300 million, I think, for mental health. There's about $300 million for technical. Many people are saying, is that really going to be enough? But it's a beginning. It's a serious beginning.
Yeah, $300 million are going towards bolstering what are called community schools, right? So this is an effort to have schools function as basically community social services hubs, right? There might be a wellness center on campus where folks can get physical and mental health services. So $300 million for those efforts, and then $300 million for high-need schools in general. It sounds like maybe the Collaborative for Educational Excellence, an agency here that's focused on improving our lowest performing schools, will be involved in that effort. And then there's some money going towards transparency and accountability and the use of local control funding formula dollars, right? There was an audit last year that suggested, as people have suspected for years, that that money may not be reaching the English learners, foster kids, and low-income students that it's intended to reach.
Let me also ask you about a few other things that are in the governor's budget. His early campaign pledge was for child development to help out. He's essentially set up a new Department of Child Development, and I want to sort of let listeners know what's going on here. This department, what's this department going to do? There are supposedly, I guess, about 10,000 new preschool spots also in the budget that are accounted for, but what's the vision?
Yeah, this has long been a priority for him, and he invested a lot of money in last year's budget to this end, 10,000 spots. I should say, he has said that he wants to make subsidized childcare universal for all low-income four-year-olds, right? So he created 10,000 spots, funding for 10,000 spots last year, another 10,000 spots in this
proposal.
These are
the increments, yeah.
Yeah, so I believe that gets us about two-thirds of the way towards universalizing that. And he's also, as you said, creating this Department of Early Childhood Development. My understanding is that that is meant to address some of the fragmentation in the system. There are multiple agencies involved in administering these many programs, right? So I think this is about ease of access for families, about efficiency.
There's a lot more in the budget with education. There's special ed money. There's money for colleges and universities, about $83.2 million for community colleges. And there's certainly
a lot more than that. The 83.2 is just for apprenticeship programs.
Right. Just for the apprenticeship. What is the total amount on community colleges?
I think around $300 million.
Yeah. And the first partner, Jennifer Siebel, is going to be leading a nutrition program. There's money for that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and that's pretty novel. I mean, we haven't
$70 million, I think. Yeah.
It, yeah. Exactly. So that's a 40% increase in the state's contribution. And we haven't seen any action on that in at least a decade, I think.
Yeah, he talked about the Moscone nickel,
right,
which we had to all look up because no one had ever heard about that. But it was
what is the Moscone nickel?
Well, George Moscone, when he was in the state Senate before he became mayor, wanted the state to kick in some money to help with school lunches. He thought the state ought to. So he proposed like a nickel, you know, about 5 cents. And I forget exactly what the formula was. Now it's up to about, I think, 25 cents. But Newsom sort of pulled that out of the air and talked about that a little bit. You know, one thing I would say is that, you know, yes, funding for schools, K through 12 plus community colleges, is really at a record high. But critics are saying, okay, we keep adding all this money, but let's see the results. You know, where are the school testing numbers aren't really that much better, especially for African-American kids, Latino kids to a lesser extent. And so I think that critics are saying, well, it's great to add this money, but let's, you know, what are you going to do to improve learning, you know, and I think that's, you know, something that certainly this governor will be evaluated on as well.
Well, what are we going to do to improve health? Let me go to you, Vanessa Roncagno. I mean, April Dombowski. One of the things that the governor is talking about that has certainly stirred up a controversy is obviously money for people who are undocumented seniors in this case.
So this is Vanessa was talking about this kind of incrementality for some of the education efforts, and you see the same thing in Newsom's approach to healthcare. And so this latest move, he wants to expand Medi-Cal coverage to undocumented seniors over the age of 65. This is building on, you know, what he did last year, extending that coverage to young adults up to the age of 26. And then before Newsom's time, Jerry Brown expanded that coverage to young kids. So he's just building on that.
And he's also building on consumer protection and also on prescription drugs. Let's talk about those.
Prescription drugs was definitely probably the biggest part of the conversation. He's got a couple really big ideas around how to try to control drug costs. So probably the main one was that he wants to create a generic drug label. And so how that would work is, you know, California would contract with drug manufacturers to make the drugs, and then California would be the one to make them available for sale. So there's a lot of questions around this. Newsom basically laid out an outline for what he would like to do, but the specifics weren't there. For example, which drugs? He mentioned insulin as one that he would like to tackle, and the governor seems to be he wants to kind of create a backstop for patients. Insulin is a drug that's been around for a really long time. We know how to make it, and yet there's three companies that control the manufacture of this drug, and so the price has gone up and up and up and up over decades, some like tenfold. And so Governor Newsom wants to get in the business of helping to get that drug out to the market so that people who depend on it.
We haven't even talked about how this is all going to go down with the legislature. We'll talk about that perhaps with Scott. But one of the toughest sells on the healthcare front is that the legislation that voters approved, the millionaire tax back in 2004, may be revamped. We're talking about mental health here.
Right. So Proposition 63 was passed a while ago to fund. It's a tax on millionaires to help fund mental health services. And there's been a lot of debate around that money in recent years, even among advocates who helped pass that law, feeling like there's not enough flexibility in how they can spend that money. And so Newsom wants to go back to the legislature to just create some more flexibility, and specifically around housing. The governor wants to be able to spend wants counties to be able to spend some of that money on making housing more available for people with mental health needs.
It's a real connection in this budget between health care and housing. I mean, it's pretty conspicuous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to ask you also about vaping. I mean, there's something in the budget for that, particularly a tax. We're talking about $32 million new tax. that would essentially on the nicotine vaping products for youth for and that would go to preventative programs as well as enforcement?
Yeah, and I think, Scott, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the only tax that – the only new tax that Governor Newsom actually mentioned.
He made a point of saying that. He goes, yeah, I'm sure he did. I didn't hear about it. You know, yeah, this one. So I think he's willing and happy to defend this one.
And so, you know, there's a long tradition of healthcare funding relying on tobacco taxes. And so we have a cigarette tax in California. It's one of the highest in the country. But one of the designs of tobacco taxes is that they are going to go down over time. So if you invest money in getting people to quit smoking, then the taxes they're going to pay on those cigarettes are eventually going to go down. And so Governor Newsom acknowledged that in this budget, that the existing tax that we have on cigarettes has been going down. And so this was the new tax on vaping, which he's following the trends there.
And Scott, we haven't even broached climate change. There's about $12 billion in this budget to essentially take on climate change. And the governor's asking legislature to put up about $500 million for drinking water, emergency shelters, infrastructure, and so forth. Is he going to have problems with the legislature? I mean, particularly with some of these specifics?
Well, you know, keep in mind, this is the opening salvo in a long process. You know, the January budget is basically, you know, his first move. It now goes to the legislature. There will be hearings. And any mayor, any executive, including a governor or president for that matter, knows that, you know, legislators have their own pet projects that they like to fund so they can tell people back home they got the money for that. And this is no different. There will be quibbling about things. I mean, we're already hearing some criticism about zeroing out a fund having to do with climate change and local communities that was sponsored by one of the members of the assembly. So, you know, yes, there will be. That's what this process is for. You know, the revenues will be updated in May, and then, you know, things will really get serious after that in terms of what's in the budget. But, you know, he also is asking for a $4.75 billion bond measure to be on the ballot in November of 2020 to address a lot of these issues around climate change and environmental concerns. He wants to also hire, you know, I think hundreds of new firefighters. And so, you know, these are all issues that generally there's agreement on. The question is, you know, how specifically what programs do you want to fund to address these issues?
Well, we've got seconds left with you, Vanessa. You want to make a comment on what the governor may have as a fight up ahead in this budget vis-a-vis education?
I think there was a lot of interest in seeing a big investment in financial aid broadly, an expansion of the Cal Grant program. And we really didn't see that. Small expansion in the funds available to student parents, but there's a lot of interest in helping students bear the total cost of attendance, right? If you talk to college students, that's what they want to talk about.
Well, remember, as Lieutenant Governor, he sat on the Regents, and he may be more kindly disposed, one would assume, perhaps, toward higher education and funding it than Governor Brown was. Governor Brown, I remember we were talking with you, Scott, about psychic dollars that he was talking about. Professors should be paid by psychic dollars. But we are coming up on a break, and I want to give you, our listeners, an opportunity. We're going to cover more. In fact, we're going to certainly take on the homelessness issue and what's in the governor's budget there. But you can give us a call right now if you have questions or comments and join the program. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Be part of the program with any questions or comments you might have. Again, toll free, you can join us at 866-733-6786. And you can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. But please feel free to be part of the program. We're going to say goodbye to Vanessa Roncagna. Thank you for your, as usual, excellent reporting. We're going to continue with April Dombowski and Scott Schaefer, and we'll be having others from the repertorial field joining us. Stay tuned. It's up ahead. More. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Governor Newsom proposed a record-breaking $220 billion budget, and we're talking about it with Scott Schaefer, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of Political Breakdown. April Dombowski is with us also. She's health correspondent for KQED News, and I want to welcome Aaron Baldessari for this segment, housing reporter for KQED's. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. And we'll talk indeed about housing with you. I want to mention the fact, though, that the governor has essentially put some things in this budget that you have to look at the budget carefully to realize are in there, because we're talking about, you know, the big categories. There's $20 million for a first state park since the 1940s, and there's also in the budget an item to end euthanizing animals, make this a no-kill state like a couple of states are, I think Michigan and Delaware.
Dogs everywhere barked approval.
Yeah, well, it's about, what, 50 million in UC Davis? The key to this is how many of these animals are going to be adoptable and, you know, who decides on what animals are euthanizing, but it's in the budget. And there are many, many other things in the budget. And again, we welcome your comments and questions about the budget. We're trying to cover the major areas. And I mentioned climate change before we went to the break. I want to bring Aaron in here on housing. But let's flesh this out a little bit, not only climate change, but obviously related to that, fire prevention. Scott, what are we seeing from Newsom?
Well, he does want to hire hundreds more firefighters, which obviously would be welcome news for people living in fire, wildfire.
Was CAL FIRE 677 over 5 years, I think, if the slides
yeah,
in my head.
Yeah, something like that. And of course, all these things will be revised up and down as it goes through the process. He also wants to make better use of technology. A lot of this is aimed at preventing fires, you know, before they get out of control, using technology to discover fires as they're first starting, hardening homes, especially in low-income areas and rural areas where, you know, a lot of these fires started, to prevent these rapid spread of the wildfires, because obviously the best medicine there is prevention or at least containment early.
Vegetation management is in the – I mean, some
yeah.
money for that as well,
well
as home rebuilding?
Yeah. Well, you may recall that when some of these wildfires were being put
home
out –
hardening. I'm sorry. Yeah.
The president, Trump, was tweeting that, oh, well, it's because, you know, California isn't doing a good job raking the forests, you know, and getting rid of all this brush that catches fire. You know, forgetting the fact that most of the open space in California is actually owned by the federal government. But there is some additional money in there for forest management to do some of the things with state lands that will help mitigate some of these wildfire risks.
And there is money in the budget. Let me, if I may, just for the moment, go back to you, April. About $500 million for drinking water facilities, emergency shelters, and infrastructure I mentioned before. And a lot of this is geared toward low-income areas, again, areas that really are particularly vulnerable to wildfires.
The governor is definitely really focused on low-income Californians, and especially with his healthcare budget. One of the things that he really talked a lot about was something called whole person care, which is Los Angeles County has really been experimenting with. And it's the idea that, you know, good health is reliant on a lot of social factors, where you live, what kind of housing you have, what kind of access you have to healthy food. And so the governor is saying that he really wants to invest in this kind of approach to healthcare, where we take a person's full, you know, social needs into account in making sure that they're healthy. And the overall look at this is that you actually save money in the long run when you do that.
Yeah, let's talk about that with you, Aaron. I mean, flesh this out more. You've got about $1.4 billion on the ballot for shelter and health care for homeless. Governor's taking some pretty decisive steps here and some giant steps.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that he's really taking a healthcare approach to addressing homelessness. And that's pretty in stark contrast to President Trump's approach and having a supply side. We need to build a ton of housing. We need to take a law enforcement approach to cracking down on encampments. The governor in this budget was really saying, look, we need to address some of the root causes of homelessness in terms of behavioral and mental health issues, and also, you know, really get people housed so that they can address their health issues, because homelessness does exacerbate health issues. It's very much more difficult to get well if you're sleeping outside and you're unsheltered. So there is, you know, a lot of money in the budget, $750 million in a new Access to Housing and Services Fund that'll pay service providers to, in some cases, pay rent to help build affordable housing and to stabilize board and care facilities and homes.
I was struck, in fact, and keep being struck by this connection between healthcare and housing. The governor used as an example, April, I want to come back to you, Aaron, in a moment, but the idea of lower costs, he tried to make the moral and ethical argument, but also a financial argument. He said fewer people, if they've got flu shots, are going to be going into emergency rooms, fewer people on the streets, and this is the equation he presented.
Exactly. That's something that health advocates have really been arguing for a long time. You know, when they ask for these investments in healthcare, is that in the long run, you save money. And you see Governor Newsom doing that around access to health coverage, for example. So last year, you know, he increased the amount of money that was available for middle class families to buy health insurance, you know, and the idea being and that's where you see, you know, this extension of Medi-Cal to other to more groups, that the more you protect the health across the population, the more money you save overall on emergency room visits or on, you know, really expensive surgeries and treatments that occur when you haven't been dealing with an illness early on.
Or having to go into these costly clinics, for that matter. And let me go back, if I may, to you, Aaron. Aaron Baldessari, again, is housing reporter for KQED News. There's New California Access to Housing and Services Fund. Spell that out for us, if you could.
Yeah, so this is a new fund. Basically, the state had been funding housing through a variety of different departments, and so this is kind of putting some money into one pot that's going to be easier to access. But it really you know, it includes some philanthropy money as well. It's really coming from this one-time surplus. So, again, this money is going to come from – it's going to help pay rent for people who are homeless or might be at risk of becoming homeless, help regions build affordable housing, and to stabilize some board and care facilities and homes. Some criticism from advocates that it's, you know, one-time funds. They really need stable funding. But certainly a lot of people are very pleased that he is putting forward such a large amount to immediately address homelessness.
And Michael, looking at some comments that are coming in here. I'm sorry, Scott, you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say, I think, you know, a lot of the proposals, like the ones that Aaron was just describing and the ones April was describing a moment ago, they really reflect his experience as a local official, as mayor in San Francisco. You know, he really championed this Care Not Cash initiative, very controversial when he put it on the ballot, helped him get elected mayor, in fact. And he really understands that you can take thousands of people off the street and there's going to be another, you know, thousands to replace those. And I think he understands the complexity of these issues and how intertwined they are with healthcare and addiction and access to healthcare. And you're seeing that reflected, I think, in this budget.
And he is saying that it is going to be performance-based. And so he wants to have certain metrics tied to doling out money for this funds. We have yet to see kind of what those metrics will be, but he does want some accountability measures built in there.
Well, he didn't say much about local construction of housing. In fact, the money may be flowing there, but there's nothing – there's really nothing in the budget there. And I'm already getting some comments about housing that I'd like to go to from listeners. For example, let me go to you in this, Aaron. Bridget writes, what about low-income, non-homeless folks? Do we get a break on state taxes? Of course not.
So he did have some money in there, an increase from $43 million for housing production of what's called the missing middle. This is so-called moderate income housing. As you might recall, affordable housing, when people talk about that, they're really talking about housing that, you know, is eligible for people of a certain income, right? So there's low income, very low income, and then this moderate income. And so those are just various caps on income where you might be eligible to take advantage of that type of housing. There had been $43 million last year for the production of moderate income housing. There's $500 million in one-time money in this budget. And then also $85 million last year for a tax credit program for low and moderate income housing and $500 million in the budget this year. So there is he is putting some more money into housing production. And he also is taking continuing to take a hard line against cities and counties who aren't meeting their state requirements for building housing. Those are the Regional Housing Needs Assessment, or RHNA. And these are goals that city and counties are supposed to meet when it comes to building new housing. And so he's, again, reiterating this pledge that he made last year, saying that, you know, we need to put some more teeth into this requirement and tie it to transportation funds.
And I would also, you know, I think the big real issue hanging out there is SB 50, which is Scott Wiener is supporting and has had a lot of opposition from local officials, including right here in San Francisco, that would really require more dense housing, especially around transit corridors. That issue is going to come back with amendments this month, and we'll see if it even makes it out of appropriations and out of the Senate. He was a little ambiguous, I would say. He sort of embracing the principles behind SB 50 without wholeheartedly endorsing the bill. And that could be a game changer if it were to, you know, overcome a lot of opposition. But I think everyone recognizes, and he set a very high, some would say unattainable, goal when he ran for governor of building 3.5 million new units of housing. And in fact, last year, the number of housing permits in California actually dropped a little bit. So it's, you know, it's not an easy problem to solve, but he's put himself out there as trying to solve it.
And if you want to know more about SB 50 and the amendments, we took that up last week. It's in our archives. And let me read some comments that are coming in here. Susan writes, on the subject of housing, Kurt writes, now we have to pay for a government-manufactured homeless crisis. The state needs to turn off all the policies that are flooding the state with people. Homelessness is not a substance abuse or mental health issue. It's a housing issue based on supply and demand. Would that it were that simple, but that's from a listener named Kurt. And we do want to hear your thoughts and hear your comments, and so you can join us, and you can join us online, and not only as well as by phone. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. And I want to go right to your calls, and let me do that forthwith, and we'll bring on Wynn. Morning, Wynn.
Morning. Thank you. What did the budget do about Governor Brown's residual programs for the water diversion from the Delta to the South and for high-speed rail?
Scott.
Yeah, well, you know, when he gave his first State of the State address back in last January of 2019, you know, the two of the big things Newsom did was to say he's not for the dual tunnels, the twin tunnels in the Delta. He was really in favor of one. And he also, some would say, pulled the plug on high-speed rail, which he really didn't do. He was really acknowledging the fact that there's no federal money for that and talking more about a linkage between jobs in the Silicon Valley with relatively affordable housing in the Central Valley. You know, the reality is there needs to be a lot more money from both the private sector and the federal government, neither of which are forthcoming right now. I mean, that Central Valley portion of high-speed rail is under construction. But, you know, unless something changes, it, you know, it'll be the train to nowhere. And so that's something that he's backed away from. But nonetheless, I think there's still hope that it can lead to something that's useful. And, you know, in terms of the water issue, he's really scaled that idea back. But I think everyone agrees that there is an environmental problem in the Delta that needs to be addressed.
And here's another caller, Sam from San Jose. You're on. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is the following. Is there any funds set aside for what happens after an earthquake? How do we repair the infrastructure? Is there any money set aside for displacement of the folks and so on and so forth? Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Well, you know, every budget has emergency reserves, and this one is no different. Of course, when there's a major earthquake or any major disaster, the first thing governors do is turn to the federal government, you know, to FEMA. That's what's happened with the wildfires. That's what would happen with earthquake as a major earthquake as well. So there is money there for short-term emergency needs, but, you know, a major earthquake in an urban area is going to cost billions and billions of dollars, and that's not something a state can by itself address.
As long as we're talking about disasters, there's $340 million in the budget that would support projects to reduce urban flood risks. I think it's important to note through 2025 and an additional $270 million for flood and restoration efforts.
Yeah, and that bond measure that we talked about, the $4.75 billion bond measure proposed for November would also, a lot of that money would be spent on things like, you know, addressing sea level rise as well as drought, floods, that kind of thing.
More of your questions or comments. James tweets, how does the budget shift the tax and transfer incidence? Is it closer to Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax proposal?
I'm sorry, what's he referring to?
He's referring to tax and transfer incidence.
I don't know what that means.
Neither do I. I figured you would, but I don't.
Well, there are no new taxes in the budget except for the vaping tax that April talked about a moment ago.
But it's an interesting question in light of wealth tax proposals and what's going to come off of those with affluence as opposed to ordinary folks.
Yeah, I mean, California is disproportionately reliant on the personal income tax, I mean, to a staggering degree. And in fact, I forget the exact numbers, but there's a very small number of individual taxpayers who fund a huge percentage of the revenues that come into the state because they're extremely wealthy. We're talking about multi-billionaires, the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world. And there are a few of them in California. So until that changes with some kind of a tax reform, that over-reliance on the personal income tax is going to continue. The Department of Finance did note that in the coming year, revenue from the personal income tax is going to go down slightly. So, you know, when that happens, you do really begin to see a quick ripple effect in state revenues. I would also add, and this is a little off topic, but there's a proposal for the November ballot to reform Proposition 13, the property tax measure, that would basically remove commercial property from some of the protections of tax increases and reassessments of property. And that would generate, I think, I'm guessing here, but about $10 billion a year. A lot of that would go to education. The governor didn't weigh in on that. He probably won't, because it's going to be very unpopular with businesses and developers and others. That kind of, you know, we just compared to other states, we don't get much revenue from property tax. And I think that that ballot measure is designed to address that.
And let me particularly urge listeners, if you have questions specifically about health or about housing, we have April Domboski and Aaron Baldessari with us in studio, and you might want to direct those questions to those ACE reporters of ours, health correspondent in the case of April. And we do, again, welcome your calls at 866-733-6786, or you can get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. And we get back to climate change here with comments coming in. Scott, I'm going to defer to you here. This is a listener who says, I voted for Governor Newsom, but I'm very worried that his focus is on politics, polls, and what will get him votes rather than the most important science to guide his hand in making policy for climate. I don't know that that's a fair criticism.
Yeah, I don't think it's a fair criticism. There is a lot in this budget about climate resilience, and I keep mentioning that climate bond, which of course has to pass before it can do anything. And there are other measures in this budget as well, $12.5 billion over the next 5 years for kind of climate resiliency measures. So I don't think it's fair. I mean, he is addressing in this budget the two things that voters do care about a lot: homelessness and the cost of prescription drugs is another, as well as issues around climate change. But I think that homelessness is and wildfires are really the two big issues that people are concerned about right now in California. And I think you see a lot of things in this budget to address those, as well as housing.
Let me go back to you, April, with a question from a listener who wants to know, will the creation of a state-owned generic drug label be a recurring cost on the budget, revenue neutral, or is it projected to have some rate of return to reinvest or return to the state? Will it be built from scratch or purchased from already existing facilities?
So this is the listener is touching on a lot of questions that we don't know the answers to yet, but that people are really wondering about. And in terms of savings, the potential for cost savings for the state here with the generic drug label is modest. And that's because generics make up a big portion of the drug market. But because they're cheap, they are a small percentage of spending on drugs. And so, the impact that we can have sort of overall is kind of a question. However, there could be really meaningful savings for individual patients who rely on the drugs that the government chooses to invest in. He was very coy about which drug companies they were going to partner with, but he was also clear that, California was not going to start building its own factories and sort of start from scratch. Where we will see, much more meaningful savings is this other proposal that Governor Newsom made around drug pricing. And what he wants to do is he wants to create uniform drug pricing. And so basically he wants to rely on California's size, just the huge market that we have, to essentially negotiate with drug companies. And this is one thing that, the U.S. stands alone in not negotiating with drug companies. And that's the reason we have the highest drug prices in the world. And so what Governor Newsom wants to do is, say to drug companies, if you want to do business in California, you're going to have to negotiate with us. And that, because it's addressing brand name drugs, if he's successful, could have a really huge impact. I think Newsom estimated something like $400 million in
savings.
Sometimes
separate the millions from the billions.
Yeah.
April Domboski, again, is a health correspondent with KQED News. So I want to go to more calls here. But first, let me go back to you, Aaron Baldessari, our housing reporter for KQED News. There's a new fund in the budget that essentially is there for those who are facing homelessness. It's rental assistance.
That's right. Yeah. And, there's also you know, money in there. Again, going back to our conversation about how this is tied to health care, $695 million to expand Medi-Cal to pay for housing and supportive services for chronically homeless. So in addition to health care services, that money could even be used for rental assistance for people who are homeless and in and out of the ER or health clinic, which, you know, I think goes again to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, this nexus between housing and health care. You know, there's also, you know, money for behavioral health as well. And so tying that to housing, again, is something that the governor is signaling with this budget.
He's also proposing about $750 million that would be used to pay rents for people who are at risk of eviction, also to fund affordable housing and maybe help board and care homes with some of the issues that they help low-income folks face. So there's a lot in the budget. And you know, a lot of these things aren't – they may be a health care spending item, but they really help people who are living on the streets or have addiction problems. So you know, you can't just look and just say, oh, they're spending this on homelessness or this on housing. A lot of these things are overlapping and have, you know, really meet multiple needs at the same time.
Yeah. So I've been saying they're synergistic in the best sense of the word. Let me get another caller on here, and that's you. Jacob, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, yes. Good morning. My name's Jacob, and I'm speaking from the perspective of being a former police officer in San Jose. And I worked at countless calls for service with people struggling with mental health. And, you know, maybe they are self-diagnosing, you know, their issues and, you know, using illegal street drugs to treat their symptoms. The question that I have is, in this $220 billion budget, I haven't seen or heard anything that might allude to some sort of inpatient mental health treatment facility. I've seen people walking around, and I don't want to be mean, but they look like zombies, and their quality of life is terrible. And I'm just wondering, you know, is there anything in the works to address this problem of people that aren't low income because they have no income and there's no hospital that can take them or care for them? And so it's just this growing problem of these people that are really struggling with mental health and illegal drug use and are having constant run-ins with the police. And it just seems like the answer, the simpler answer, would be to have a mental health, you know, an inpatient mental health hospital that can treat these people.
Jacob, I thank you for your call and your concern. April, I'm good to you.
Yeah, so Newsom actually alluded to, you know, history, and this is a point in our history that we go back to a lot, which is, you know, when Ronald Reagan was governor, he shut down all of the institutions that we had for inpatient mental health treatment. I mean, not all of them, but most of them. And the idea was that, you know, instead of ghettoizing folks with mental illness into these hospitals, that, you know, what's actually better for their mental health is to live in community and get treatment in the community. And unfortunately, you know, that money never actually followed. And so I think you see Newsom actually trying through various different venues to try to reinvest some of that money into these community programs where, you know, people can get mental health and addiction services, not necessarily in an institution. He did say, and this was something that was really interesting to me, that he really wants to crack down on insurance companies that aren't doing their job around covering mental health. And that would include inpatient stays at hospitals. And so this is something that's been going on for a long time. We have laws that say that insurers have to cover, you know, mental health the same way they would cover physical health, but they haven't been doing it. That, you know, insurers have really been putting up various kinds of roadblocks, requiring prior authorizations, making it really hard for patients to prove that this is a medically necessary treatment that they need. And so you have doctors saying you need to go into the hospital, and then you have insurers saying, well, no, we're not going to pay for that. And Governor Newsom came out rather boldly and said that he was going to crack down on this, that he said he wants to prepare folks for some high-profile fines. And so this is a way of addressing, you know, some of these issues way upstream, you know, at the business level that will hopefully have an impact on, you know, what we see on our streets.
We can hope. And Aaron, let me go back to you, if I may, with a question from a listener named Angela. Says, I appreciate all the governor is doing to address the homeless crisis, but no one is talking about the extreme racial disparities in the homeless population. I was reading something from the Greenlining Institute, which you may be familiar with, which says pretty much that. It compliments the governor on health and homelessness, but says he's much weaker, particularly in underserved communities and racial communities.
You know, that's, I think that's a fair criticism. There's certainly a long history there with these racial disparities. And to the extent that the governor is putting money to this issue in general, I mean, I think that that, you know, a lot of advocates have praised his stance there. Again, some of the criticism is that, look, this is a one-time fund. We don't know what's going to happen next year. So, you know, are we building the right systems and institutions for a longer-term look at addressing homelessness? This wasn't a crisis that happened in one day and certainly is not going to be, you know, addressed in one fiscal year. So, you know, I think that's it's a fair criticism.
And we got seconds left here. Scott, let me go to you. Shana writes, fighting climate change isn't the same as adapting to climate change, and fighting fires is adaptation. We need support for helping low-income homes transition away from natural gas, expanding programs that get electric cars into the hands of low-income Californians, and dramatically improve public transportation.
Agreed.
Couldn't agree more, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, no one state is going to solve climate change. And I think California has done more than most states have. And I think under this governor, he's going to continue a lot of the policies that Jerry Brown put in place with a lot of support from the legislature, including, you know, some of these issues that the writer, the listener there described. But there's also some concern that some of the money that was going to low-income communities around weatherization, for example, those funds was zeroed out to help conserve energy. So, you know, this is just the beginning of this long budget process, Michael. This is not by any means the final statement.
Well, we got to do it by mid-June,
We'll
leave it there.
Sure.
Thank you all for your expertise. Great to have you all. Scott Schaefer, April Dombowski, Aaron Baldessari, and earlier Vanessa Roncagno. And another hour of Forum is up ahead. Stay tuned for that. That's next. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.